Jason.
Lovely.
Thanks, pal. I loved it from beginning to end. Thank you.
Oh, bless you.
Hello and welcome along to Dave Berry's Dad Pod. Since my daughter Evie was born over 2 years ago, this has been the place that I have gleaned invaluable dad advice from a host of interesting people. And this time out, I am delighted to be joined by a singer, an actor, a radio show host, and one of the nation's favourite comedians. He is also a father to six children. It's Jason Manford. Hey, Jason.
Hiya, brother.
Mate, when you hear someone say father to six children out loud, does it, I can only imagine, does it send a little ripple of like, it,
I mean, obviously I don't know any different now, but yeah, it does still sound like, I'd say what it is, it's knowing that as soon as you say it, there's a conversation to be had. Like, no one, do you know what I mean? If you've got two kids, it doesn't, there's, that's it, that's the end of the sentence. But when you say
join
you get
the queue,
six,
mate. Yeah,
people are like, I'm sorry, what? What did you say? So yeah, it is a lot of children. And at some point I'll get it right. But no, it's a lot of fun. And it's never a quiet house, you know what I mean? So it's I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, of course. Now, later this year, you're going to be away from the kids for quite a while because you're hitting the road with your huge stand-up tour, like me. Yeah. Tickets are available on Jason's website, by the way. We know there's a great show in store. But obviously, this has been rescheduled because the whole world had to be rescheduled. Are you just? Is it all just excitement for you getting back on the road, or is there any apprehension about it? How are you feeling?
I was actually, funnily enough, I was just talking to my dad just before this, and you know when you sort of like me and my dad don't have deep existential chats on a regular basis, but you know when you sort of suddenly say something really honest and your dad like sort of comes up with some good advice, like, or at least lets you say it out loud, I sort of had this existential crisis, I suppose, which is I've always been a comedian, like even before I got paid to do it, you know, you do it for free for a long time. So essentially what you end up when you become a professional comic is you're getting paid to do the hobby. You're getting paid to do the thing you love doing. And I've been doing it since I was 16. I started stand-up as a hobby when I was 16. So you're talking, you know, 23, 24 years of doing this job, week in, week out, for my whole life. So then suddenly, when it's taken away from you, I identify as a comedian. Like, I am what I do. And so once that thing has been taken away from you, I've really spent the last year wondering who I am. I don't actually know what I am or who I am without this job, you know. And to, you know, I know I'm not frontline, I'm not a key worker, but to find out you're unessential, I mean, that's heartbreaking. What a phrase. What a phrase. Unessential. Like, what a horrendous phrase. There was no like group meeting where they were like, we need to come up with a term for everybody else who just enjoys what they do and, you know, isn't necessarily saving the planet and keeping us going. I just call them the unessential. These losers. Yeah,
I embarrassed myself enough to say to my wife that, you know, during the middle of all of this, but you see, I'm doing the breakfast show in the morning and those key workers, they're listening to me and hopefully I'm giving them a bit of a smile on their face.
Yeah.
So I'm a hero too, honey.
Essentially, like, nah. I've called our radio shows, we're key workers to the key workers. We're frontline to the frontline, baby.
The best of the best. No, I'm pushing it too far.
But you know what? It's interesting you say that because, again, I had a conversation with my dad about that at the time. And, you know, my dad's a janitor, my mum's a nurse, you know, so they have worked all the way through the pandemic. And I had that same thing where I was sort of laughing about this, you know, the fact that we were these unessential, the unclapped, I called us. and he said, you know, interestingly, he said, you know, when you get home from a day at work or, like you said, listening to the radio in the morning, like after a stressful day, especially my mum, you know, and nurses and people working frontline, when you get home after a long day, you do want to forget and you do want to relax and forget about the tough, horrendous things that you've seen in that day. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a bit, neither of us are up ourselves, but there is a moment where you do need that switch off, and we are the switch off, you know, and that's how I sort of grounded myself a little bit during the pandemic.
Well, no, absolutely. And you know, and well done once again to all those key workers on what's been, you know, such a challenging time for them. It really has been. Let's go back a step though, Jason, because obviously, you know, you are a star of stage and you're a singer and, you know, a star of screen as well. But you said then, which is really interesting, you identified as a comedian and that was taken away from you. And you mentioned that to your dad. What did he say? What did he have to say to you?
you know, he said that the thing with my dad is that he's never really found a place, like he's never found a job that he loves. Not like us, who've been lucky to find, you know, jobs that we adore and then get paid for them, which is the dream, isn't it? That's the absolute dream.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and he said, essentially, which you know, you just need to hear someone say it sometimes, which is we are more than the sum of our parts. You know, we are a dad and we are a son and a husband and a friend and a comedian, in my case, you know, and like you said, radio and all the different things. But we're more than that as well. And it's just trying to work that out, I suppose, when you're trying to find your place in the world. And if you are, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, there'll be other people out there, whatever your job is or whatever your thing is, you do feel defined by it, you know, whether you're a, you know, maybe you're a copper or a, you know, frontline, or maybe a businessman or a businesswoman or whatever. You do find yourself defined by those jobs. So I guess it's trying to find those other things that are, you know, and he just rattled off a few things that I was like, oh yeah, no, I do like that. Yeah, I guess there is that as well. You know, and he sort of grounded me a little bit, which is, which you need sometimes, don't you?
Wise words from Mr. Manford Senior there, which is lovely to hear. So a kind of year and a bit in lockdown as a father to six, is that a hindrance when it comes to writing comedy, or is it a massive help, Jason?
Well,
and I'd like to touch a very question. If I may, very
yeah,
briefly,
yeah, please do. Is
because I watched you with the brilliant Stand Up To Cancer show you did with Sean Ryder, and kind of trying to impart those stories onto, you know, trying to persuade him to tell some stories.
I've just finished the counselling for that.
It was for a great cause, and it was entertaining television. But what I mean is, was it a time for you to glean those stories from your kids and think about how you could possibly work those in?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I think so. And I think also having kids reminds you of being a kid and reminds you of those stories. And you know, my kids are always saying, oh daddy, tell us about a time when, you know, you got in trouble, or you know, you tell us about a time that you did something wrong. They love those. They're their favorite stories, you know.
Right,
I go, right, okay, sit down. So once I set fire to my friend's back garden, you know what I mean, like and then stole all the neighbor's milk to put it out. Like that's the stories they want to hear. Like and it sort of sounds like something from like you know, from the Beano or something. Some of my stories, I'm telling the kids the stories. They sound absolutely comical.
Capers. It was capers, yeah. Jason. Yeah.
That's what I always say, you know, like, I always say that to my kids. I was like, you know, we grew up on quite a, you know, a nice council estate, actually, you know, where it, like, there was never going to be any proper crime, but you probably wouldn't leave a freshly baked apple pie on a window ledge. Like, it's that sort of crime. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a Tom and Jerry crime.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, oh, really? You're going to tell me off of this? So, I do glean stuff from the kids, but not necessarily. It's a very thin line when it comes to stand-up, because you've got to make sure. It's a bit like showing people pictures of your kids. You've got to make sure that this is interesting to everybody, not just you, because they're your kids. Because as we know, our kids are always the best. They're the best of the kids, and don't necessarily like any others. So you've got to come up with stuff that is holding a mirror to people. You know, you've got to go, this is a thing that happens with my kids, and then it's got to be something that other parents can go, oh my goodness, yeah, that's happened with my kids as well. Or if they've not got kids, oh, I remember when I was a kid, that's the sort of thing that we would get away with, or we would do, or we would get in trouble for. Because, you know, with stand-up, it's about hitting the biggest demographic as possible when it comes to your story. So they have to be specific to you, but they also have to have a bit of, you know, they have to be a bit generic so that people get on board with them and go, okay, I can see what themes you're sort of playing with here. And I do tell the kids quite a lot, because my daughters are getting to an age, they're high school now, they're 11, and on occasion, something will happen. And as soon as it happens, one of my daughters, mainly my older of the two twins, I know it's about a bit weird, 5 minutes, but she claims it. But she'll always go, oh, daddy, that's not going to be in your set now, is it? That's not going to be in your company. And I go, yeah, probably. Yeah, probably will be my set. Like, oh, you're joking, because like my friends will say.
Right.
I never specify which kid did what. Like, I'm always really careful when I write my material that, you know, they don't necessarily know which one is what. Sometimes there's no getting away from it, but I try and be quite, you know, careful with who, and I never name them and stuff like that, you know. But at the same time, you know, I just say to them, they say, oh, do you have to? I said, well, look, if you really don't want me to, then obviously I wouldn't, but generally I only pick sort of soft stuff anyway. But I said, look, do you like your holidays? Do you like holidays? I go, yeah. I go, do you like all your toys and that? Do you like having a bedroom each in this house? They're like, yeah.
Those trainers are nice.
I said, exactly. It's those trainers, right. Live at the Apollo, pay for them. So... So I just go, basically, if you like your things, keep doing stupid things and we'll all be fine.
And let Daddy talk about them. Yeah, fair
contribute
play.
To his family. Yeah.
What I was going to ask, and you know, based on that and the kids bringing home stuff from time to time that you want to use, would, if COVID hadn't happened and I'd bought a ticket and I'd gone to see Like Me with my friends and I'd watched it when it was meant to happen, is it a different set to the one that I'm going to be seeing buying a ticket this time round?
That's a good question, because yes, very much so. There's quite a bit that I wrote that isn't really relevant anymore in an odd way, not just necessarily for the audience, but for me, I feel like I've slightly changed opinions on things or viewpoints on things that I think, I actually think this way now, and I can sort of write a bit more about that. Originally, the show was quite an introspective show, and now I've looked a bit further afield at everybody else, and the general sort of loose theme of the show is that there's a modern or a presumed modern obsession with being liked. It releases endorphins in the brain when you get a click on Facebook now. People just log on to see how many likes their comments and pictures and things have got. And originally my theory was this didn't used to be a thing. This is not a thing that people were obsessed about, and now they are obsessed about being liked. It's sort of important to people. And I sort of went back to when I talk to my children, I find it very hard sometimes to tell them off or to be angry with them because, you know, I work away a bit and, you know, I'm divorced as well from four of my children's mum. So there's an element of going, I don't want these few days that we've got together to be sort of, you know, dictated or hampered by a grounding or a telling off. So I'm a bit softer, I think, than I probably would be. And certainly compared to my parents. And so it's hard, I think, these days for parents to have that moment where your children don't like you. And it's going to happen to us all at some point. You've got to tell them something that they don't want to hear. And so for a few minutes, they don't like you, or for a few hours, or for the rest of the night, or whatever it is. And that bothers me. And I think it bothers a lot of modern parents because we're geared towards being liked. It's become part of our experience, I suppose, in sort of 21st century. Whereas when I think back to my childhood, my dad literally would say, "I don't care if you like me or not." Like, he would literally say the words, "I'm not here to be your friend."
Yeah.
No, he'd say that. He'd say, "I've got Tony. Tony's my friend. I don't need you to be my friend. I've got a friend. I've got friends. I'm here to make sure you get to 18 alive. That's what my job is, you know." And I sort of joked about, you know, when I was a kid, like, I would like threaten to leave home three times a week. And two of those times, my dad would help me pack. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just things that we don't necessarily, you know, do now in this sort of modern world of, you know, mental health awareness and things like that.
Your parents aren't helping you pack your case when you say you're going
exactly,
out.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think a lot of it changed. A lot of the material changed, I think, because I suddenly was spending so much more time with my kids than it was giving me a lot more time to think, I suppose, of that. So in a way, it's helped me in it, you know, because I think it'll be a better show because of this time that I've had away from the stage.
Find the perfect space for your business with DRK & Company Realty. Flexible office suites are available. Employees and clients benefit from free parking, front door access, and walkable dining, retail, and hotels at the Polaris Lifestyle Center. Managed by DRK & Company Realty, one of Central Ohio's most trusted leaders, this safe, well-maintained property offers dedicated on-site management and responsive maintenance. Grow your business at an address designed for success at 470 Old Worthington Road. Visit drk-realty.com to learn more.
And if we look at your last tour, Muddle Class, I think it was such an interesting umbrella topic, particularly when it comes to some parents. And it's something we've touched on before on the Dad Pod, is that idea of, you know, you're a working class guy from a council estate, a nice one, albeit a nice one. And now, because of your success, you consider yourself to be middle class, and your children are middle class.
They certainly are, yeah.
Yeah, they certainly are, and that's sometimes a difficult balance to strike between imparting that work ethic that your parents clearly had to help get you to where you are, which obviously you did on your own with your talent, but you know, and for them to enjoy the trappings that are available to them. So how do you go about striking that middle ground? And also, how do you go about making that funny? I love that your son asked for a yoga mat for Christmas, something I can't imagine that you ever did. I certainly know I never did.
I didn't even know what it was.
Where is the balance there for you, Jason?
I get you're right. It's a constant balance and a constant battle, I think, as well, internally a lot of the time, because you know, a lot of things I let them do and let them have and stuff, because I think, well, I struggled and I had a tough childhood. I always say this line, which is not necessarily a gag, but I just think it's a funny observation, which is I had an underprivileged childhood. I found out later, because at the time I didn't know. I had nothing to compare it against, and I just spent childhood laughing and having a good time and playing, and you know, I didn't really notice it. But my kids obviously have got all these opportunities, and I think I'm a bit pushy, I think, when it comes to certain things. So obviously I've got gags about it, and there's some stuff that's happened, you know, like in real life, that I've then turned into stand up. You know, we had a moment where I did that thing, which I'm sure all parents have done at some point, where you go driving around the places that you grew up in with your kids in the back to sort of show them, like, what you experience, you know. And I was like driving down my old road, my old council estate road, and I was about to tell them, oh, this is where daddy grew up. And there was a moment where my daughter locked the door in the back of the car. I just put the finger. I was like, what are you doing? She went, oh, it looks a bit rough around here, daddy. I was like, this is where I'm from, you cheeky git.
The worst one was I tried to do that. My daughter's a little young for this, but I took my wife to kind of like my ends in Southeast London, deepest South London, and gentrification had ruined it all, and it was all quite nice there. And I was like, I want this to look like the mean streets of Brooklyn back in the 80s, but it really wasn't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was rough round here. What, near the Cheese Hamlet? Yeah.
Yeah. Your fromagerie looks like a tough place to hang around, Dad.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So yeah, I do sort of have those moments of thinking, oh my God, these kids. And the work ethic thing is massive, because like I said, my parents were hard workers. You know, I work hard. And so it's trying to make sure, like, my kids don't really have, I've not really got into the pocket money thing. I never had pocket money. So I just don't know how that work. I don't know how to work that out. Suddenly, and I know what my kids are like, that, you know, one of them will end up with 400 quid like in 3 years time, because they've not spent any of it. And I'll be like, hang on a minute. This is not right. So I've not got into that yet. There is moments where, I mean, this is something I would never usually admit to, but so we've got a cleaner, you know, comes in and cleans the house, and she's brilliant. We've had her for years. And this was probably the worst moment of my parenting career, where, so Suzanne comes in all the time. She's brilliant. We're part of the family. We love her loads. And my daughter had not tidied in her bedroom. And I come upstairs and I said, she's about seven at the time. She's 11 now. So about seven at the time. And I said, what's going on? Why is your bedroom such a mess? She was like, what do you mean? I said, make your bed. She said, I don't want to. I said, well, if you're not going to make it, who's going to make it? And she said, Suzanne.
Oh no.
The cleaner. And I went, right.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So that was four years ago, and she's never made their bed since. I said, you don't do those. You do my room, because I've made enough beds. So feel free to do my room. That's fine. I said, but don't touch those kids' bedrooms. They need to, you know, have a moment where they realize you've got to do
well. You see, that is a perfect example of where, Jason, it is, you do have to be the bad person every now and again. Being disliked by your kids for a reason such as that is an invaluable life lesson that they need to take with them to be good adults and good people. Because the adults I've met who would have that kind of attitude are people that I really have hated and loathed being around when I have been.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's the thing. I think it's having that moment. You know, it's that sort of thing, isn't it? Show you the child at seven and I'll show you the man or the woman or whatever. And I think there's so many moments like that that I realize that they have been You know, I do. I have spoiled them. We went to watch a musical. Now, obviously, I do musicals myself, so I know a lot of people in that business. And invariably, we finish watching a show. Somebody in it, I'll know. They'll text me. Do you want to come and backstage and meet the cast, or come and look at the stage, or whatever? It's a really nice little treat. Really lovely. And we went to watch Six, the musical, with my girls. And we got to the end of the show, and my daughters were just sat there in the seats. And I was like, right, come on then. They were like, what? I was like, come on, we're going. She was like, we're not going to meet the cast. I was like, no, that's not a normal thing that people get to do. I don't know any of these people. So I'm not going to just... they were so used to it, like being a... It sort of reminds me a bit, I mean, not on this level, because it's on the best... he's on the ultimate level. But Peter Jones, the dragon.
Yeah.
Told us a story once that he... they obviously fly... they've got a private jet. You know, that's... Yeah. You got that sort of money. You're not flying easy jet, are you? And they're flying to wherever, Portugal or wherever, and they, you know, the Caribbean or whatever, and they get on a flight, and it's one of the first times that they've used a commercial flight. So they're still in first, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be in the back, are they?
They're not slumming it. But as they were walking through, Peter says that his daughter, out of nowhere, just went, Daddy, why are all these people on our plane?
No.
I was like, right, well, we've not got to that level.
That's an amazing story from all these people. Are you friends with my father? Hello, nice to meet you. Hello.
Oh, God. Yeah, so I always have that in the back of my mind. I always think, you know. So I guess the sort of, you know, I called it middle class because I was stuck between the two. And so one of the things that comes out of that is I try and give my kids probably too many opportunities to do stuff, to find their thing that they... you know, that they're going to be passionate about. And I think I've probably, you know, we've started karate, we've started tennis, we've started singing lessons, we've got dances, you know. And so their diary's packed with stuff, you know, because I think you need to, one of the rules I have about childhood, about my kids, is you need to get out of childhood at 16. You need a language that you weren't taught at school. You need a sport, a team sport that you've decent at that you can play, and you know, and then something arty, something fun, and you know, and those, if you can get those few things, then you've not, I feel like you've not wasted your extracurricular time.
I love that. I've not thought of that.
Yeah, and an instrument, that was the other thing I was gonna say, an instrument. Because that's the thing, that the only regret I have is when I look back at my childhood, I loved it, I had a great time, you know, certainly under the circumstances, but I've got mates who play piano. I've got pals who play guitars. I've got people who are fluent in other languages. I've got people who are great at football or tennis and stuff. And these are the things that I've had to pick up later. And then you're busy and it's a struggle and, you know, you've not got that time anymore. So that's the only thing that I try and cement into the kids, is that, you know, when we're sat there in Portuguese lessons on a Sunday afternoon, or I'm dragging them to the tennis club up the road there, is that I'm doing this because I know one day you'll be so thankful that I made you do this, because I would have been thankful if my parents would have made me do that.
Yeah. No, 100%. That is a really good piece of advice. It really is. So, Jason, obviously, we've touched on the fact that, you know, you're in the theatre, and we know that you're a great stand-up comedian, and there'll be stuff that your kids, I believe, are privy to, and other things that they're not quite old enough to be able to see. Yeah. But one thing we do know that they saw was the reveal on The Masked Singer, because you said that the kids were seeing it as the nation was seeing it.
Yeah.
So what I would like to do is almost the kind of director's commentary, the DVD extras, if you would.
Yeah.
What happened when you got home that evening or the following day when the kids were up? I mean, how did that go down? Because it was an amazing moment.
Yeah. Well, I remember, so I'd been offered it in the August, I think, and we were on holiday. And I had no idea what this show was. I'd seen no clips of it. But one of the producers of it was a friend of mine, and just said, oh, you know, I think it's going to be great. And also, we want people that when the mask comes off, at least there's a good chance of people knowing who they are. So will you do it? I said, okay, fine. So I was well up for doing it. It was a real honor to do the first series. And they sent me the costumes, you know, pictures, and they were amazing. But one of the things I was struggling with was the songs, you know, what songs to pick to do, you know, because obviously it's got to be something you can sing half decently, but also something that audiences love. And so surreptitiously over that holiday, I put together my playlist. You go to them with about 10 songs and then the producers pick, you know, right, top six or whatever, depending on what other people are singing and stuff. And so they actually picked things like Little Mix. My children picked like Little Mix, Black Magic, and Meatloaf we sang. And there was like a Michael Bublé, and Take That, I did a Take That song. And so they didn't realize, because the conversations we were having, that they were actually picking my playlist for The Masked Singer, right, which was great fun. And then it all started, filmed it. I was actually rehearsing at the time, so nobody noticed me missing from the house because I was out anyway all day rehearsing, and then we fitted it around that. I'd obviously told my wife that I was doing it, but other than her, nobody else in the family, parents, wow, brothers, children, nobody knew. So we watched the show every week. It's exactly the sort of show we watch. We love all that. I Can See Your Voice, and you know, and X Factor and BGT and all that. We love all those. So we're watching it every week. And I think it was like third week in before anyone even mentioned my name. Up to that point, it had been Michael Ball or, you know, whatever. And my kids were laughing like, oh, Daddy, they think it's you. I was like, I know, right? So we watched it together on a sort of Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
So that was fun. But then the final was one of those days where I wasn't there, but my daughter was at a sleepover with her pals. And by all accounts, all her friends were going, that's your daddy. My daughter, 10 years old, was going, I think I would know if that was my dad.
If he was a 6-foot hedgehog, I think this would have
come up in conversation. I'd have seen one of those spikes in the Alps. And then, of course, when the reveal happened, she was livid.
Oh, was she?
Absolutely,
oh, bless.
Absolutely livid. Yeah, because she was like in front of her friends and she didn't know this thing that I was on. And so she rang 10:30 at night, it was.
Ooh.
You know, she was on a sleepover. You know, she should have been asleep anyway. But I'm on the way home from somewhere and she rang me. Daddy, why didn't you tell me about The Masked Singer? I feel so silly in front of all my friends. I said it was a secret. I thought it'd be fun. And so it was fun. The next day, she was laughing about it. But yeah, on the night, she was really annoyed.
Oh, wow. 10:30, you do not want that phone call.
You don't want that phone call to get a little telling off of your 10-year-old, yeah.
Jason, moving on, this is the last section of the podcast is always kind of dedicated to the same three questions, which I ask of all my guests. And I think you've already given, for me, a fantastic piece of advice. I love the idea of, you know, my daughter coming out of childhood and her teenage years, being able to play the flute, being a black belt in karate, and speak a little bit of Cantonese.
That would be the dream.
Right? Whatever, something along those lines. Yeah, totally. I love that. What would be your piece of advice for all of the parents who have downloaded this and are listening now? Is there something, you know, right at the front of your mind that you'd like to share?
Yes, I think this is the most useful piece of advice I see, which is everything in childhood is a phase, good or bad. Everything's a phase. You know, we've still got our 3-year-old getting into bed with us of an evening, and my wife panics, you know, oh, what's going to happen? You know, he's not going to bed. I said, look, no 15-year-old is getting in bed with his parents. At some point, this will stop. You know what I mean? I was like, budge up, Dad. At some point, these things stop. And I think that's what I've learned from having six is, even if, you know, you have those parents sometimes and they just have a baby and they say, how's it all going? They go, do you know what? Absolute dream. Sleeping unbelievably. Goes to bed at 7, up at 7 the next morning. Can't believe my luck. And I always think, that's a phase.
Yeah.
At some point that will go wrong, and vice versa. If you're having sleepless nights and your daughter's not sleeping or whatever, that's also a phase. And so everything in childhood is a phase that will possibly be over at some point, good or bad, you know. And obviously the trick is to try and just keep the good ones going for as long as you can.
Absolutely.
So I think it's just that. I think we worry a lot of things like that. You know, I think Romesh does a brilliant routine. Romesh Ranganathan does a great routine that always makes me chuckle when I see it on the telly, which is about his wife potty training, you know, panicking because the little boy isn't toilet trained. And he's like, look, there's no 25-year-old at a party just weeing himself and just going, look, nobody trained me. Like, it's a really funny routine that he does. But I think it's so true, you know, it's so true.
Yeah.
You will get there, you know, we have bedwetters or your nightmares or weird phobias or just things that they won't eat or, things that they won't do. Everything is a phase. And I think that the only thing you can do, you can tell your kid all day long what to do and what not to do. the only way of getting things through, whether it's food or activities or behavior, is learned behavior from you, really, and sort of getting it from you. And if I was surprised that I just started really exercising, I suppose, and eating well this year, can you believe, after nearly 40 years. And it's amazing how quickly your kids notice you doing a bit of yoga or going out for a run in the morning or eating, you know, a different sort of food. What's that, Daddy? Can I have a taste? Or can I come out for a run with you around the block? Or it's amazing how you could tell them all day, right, get up and have a run. Eat that. They won't listen to you. But suddenly, because you're doing it as part of your day, it just becomes part of their day. You know, it's and obviously at some point that won't happen. When they're, I mean, if your kids are 14, 15, this advice is null and void. It's too late for you.
It's, you're looking great, by the way, Jason. I know that you've been on a health kick, and I was listening to your Absolute Radio show on Sunday, and I love the fact that your dad is trolling you about his weight gain since I think it was the early 1970s, wasn't it? What did he message
I said,
you?
Oh, I've lost 2 stone since January. He said, I'm piling it on. I put 1971, I was 10 stone. This morning, I'm 10 stone 3. Piling it on.
Okay, up next, Jason, again, something that I like to ask of all my guests, I suppose a bit of a time capsule, really, but the question is, your children hear this back in 15 years from now, what would you like to say to them?
Oh, crikey, 15 years from now, so that's 20, my eldest will be 26, so, oh God, what's the idea of that? Please don't be pregnant. That's all.
We can edit this little breakdown out, Jason. And just
please have seen some of the world first. Please. crikey, what would I tell my kids in 15, if you want to hear this in 15 years' time? I guess I would say that I've learned this lesson, thankfully. And weirdly, the pandemic has taught me a few lessons, Richard. It was to really work out the priorities of things. And I think dads can, and look, I know this is not a 21st century thing to think or say, but it is still the case in a lot of men's brains. A lot of men still see themselves and put the pressure on themselves to be the breadwinner or to be that person who goes off to work. And I know that's less, you know, prevalent now as it used to be, and certainly is in a lot of cases. But it's still in our, whether it's just in our minds, our memories, that's the way our dads were, it's in there somewhere. And we sometimes put a bit of pressure on ourselves. And we often think our contribution to the family is going out to work and earning that money to put the roof over the head or whatever it is, you know. And I have always thought like that. I never realized how much I was missing, I think, from my kids' childhoods. And this last year, being forced to stay at home with them, made me realize that, really. And I'm so thankful, in a way, that I learned it before it was too late, and it was too late to sort of make up for lost time. So I think what I would say to my children is, I was away a lot, I was working a lot, but I was doing it for you. I was doing it to give you the start in life that I never got.
Lovely.
That's what I'd say. Do not be pregnant.
And finally, there's an old saying about you can't pick a favourite child.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to name them. Do you have a favourite child, yes or no?
I mean...
The initial reaction to that question every time is always fantastic.
Yeah, because, and I say this to my kids all the time, I go, you've got a favourite parent, so... All kids have got a favourite parent, and it's usually mum. So I think it's totally well within our rights to have a favourite kid. But what I will say is my favourite kid choice changes.
Yeah.
So one day it'll be that one. One day it'll be another one. It's just, I think I'm just at a point where it's just whichever one is giving me the least amount of a headache that day.
Yeah, okay.
So that's my favourite one.
You're on pole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just whoever, who's causing me the least amount of jip Well, right, you're my favourite. I could get to the end of every day and probably do a diary of who was my favourite that day. And then when you look back at it over a year, you're like, oh my God, they all had 50 days each where they were the favourite. Like, it would be even over a year.
What a spreadsheet.
It would be a spreadsheet, yeah. So I guess it's like, yeah, it's whichever one's being good, but also not being good in a way where, you'll find this. You just got the one, haven't you? The one.
Just the one, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Evie, so, she's 2.5.
Oh, yeah. Lovely. Oh, you'll need another one at some point. I will. That's my offer. That's my offer of advice to you.
Okay.
2 is the best number. And Dave, I've done all the numbers and 2 is the best. 2 is the right amount. Okay? Okay. Family tickets still work. You don't have to change your car. You know what I mean? Like it's all there for you. 2 is the perfect number. Also, it's rare that you meet an only child later on in life and they're not a bit odd. So just bear that in mind. Do you know what I mean?
I'm actually running that through my mind now, friends I know. Yeah, you're right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're always a bit odd. And the reason is because they never had a sibling to punch them in the face when they were being a dick. You know what I mean? If you've not got that person to occasionally give you a little slap for when you're out of order, you grow up thinking you're absolutely, you know, a supreme being. So, that's my, anyway, I've gone off tangent. When it comes to favourite children, it's just whichever one is not being an absolute nightmare that day, but also being good without being that sort of showy good. You find this when you have more than one child, which is occasionally your children will be good to prove how bad another one's being. They're not doing it because they want to be good. They're doing it because they know that one will get even more in trouble because they're being so good in comparison. So it's trying to work out whether, you know, how evil they're being when it comes to being good.
Jason, it's always a pleasure to spend some time in your company, my friend. Thank you for what has been a very funny, very informative and very insightful edition of the Dad Pod. Good luck with the tour, because I know all of your fans and tickets are available on Jason's website are going to be thrilled to see you back on stage. And there's so many dates and so many times that people can go and see you. So best of luck. Love to the family, of course.
Yeah,
thank you very
too,
much
man.
Indeed. Jason Manford. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, pal.
The hedgehog himself, Jason Manford there. Tickets for his tour, like me, are available right now. He's doing dates up and down the country, coming to venues near you. So go on to Jason's website for more information. Now, I want to take a moment to say thank you to all of my guests for giving me such great dad advice this series. And even more importantly, I want to thank you all for listening and give a shout out to a few people who have got in touch with the Dad Pod so far. Paul the Handyman in Brisbane, thank you for your message. Grant M62 said he loves listening to these podcasts. He related to the bit in the Greg Wallace episode about watching films over and over again. He said his daughter used to cry rewinding the VHS. Jesus of Nairshire on Twitter, best of luck becoming a dad for the first time. I'm so pleased for you and the family. Also to Tim Gatt, Lee Brownie, Kerry Kent, Billy Boyd, Anna James, Jane Brocklesby. Thank you all for your messages. And just like those lovely people, you can get in touch with me anytime you like. It's Dave_Berry_Insta, or you can email me DaveBerryDadPod@gmail.com. Thank you very much indeed to those of you who subscribed, rated and reviewed. If you've missed any episodes of my Dad Pod, you can hear the likes of Joe Swash or Tyson Fury or Tim Minchin. They're all available for you to listen back to. And don't forget, you can hear me on the Dave Berry Breakfast Show across the Absolute Radio Network weekdays from 6 a.m. See you next time.